Welcome back, William Gillespie and his partner. And they're probably doing a historical thing on rock, too. And then there's a chat show looking all the way up to January 20th. There'll be a Martin Luther King birthday program special on that Monday slot, which has been a tradition and convenient. Well, I talked out the hour. In fact, I went over a little bit here. It's time for the Labor Hour, speaking of promising programs. Oh, my God. What was that?
Thank you. Welcome, folks, to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air on WFT, listener-supported community radio station, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and live worldwide at webcasting at www.weft.org. Views and opinions expressed here are those of speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Bob with some underwriting announcements.
The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees.
Okay, thank you, Bob. And we've got a special guest here in the studio from Decatur, Illinois, Mike Griffin, who we're going to be talking to here shortly. And first, we have a few labor news headlines we'd like you to hear. And I just want to wish everybody happy holidays and stuff. I hope everyone's having a good holiday season. And anyway, I guess we'll start with Bob.
What? No Merry Christmas, or it's too late?
Well, I could say Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Joyful Kwanzaa, and anything else, but I just do the short version. Happy holidays.
Here's a happy Christmas story, Bill.
How about generous saying happy holidays?
For the past several Christmases, workers at Honeywell's uranium plant in Metropolis, Illinois, have had little to celebrate. Most of the workers at the plant have spent the best part of 4 years in a series of labor struggles with the company. First a tense 13-month lockout ending in 2011, then post-lockout disputes in which the union alleged that the company failed to abide by the new contract, and then, in July of 2012, a year-long shuttering of the plant that led to temporary layoffs of almost the entire union workforce. This holiday season, however, the workers are finally getting something to cheer about, all of their jobs back, 2 days before Christmas. So this was December 23rd. Earlier this month, Honeywell's new plant manager, Jim Pritchett, recalled the final 11 of the nearly 200 laid-off union workers, including the union local president, Stephen Leck. The last of the workers restarted their jobs on Monday, December 23rd. The union, United Steelworkers, USW Local 7-699, is hoping that the recalls may be a sign of improved relations with Honeywell. That relationship grew even more strained this summer after Honeywell reopened the renovated plant in May, while the company began bringing back laid-off union workers in an order determined by lists negotiated with the union, is stopped with 21 workers still left on the list. Local 7-699 alleges that this was an attempt to avoid rehiring Leck, who was next in line. Out of solidarity with the laid-off workers, some union workers refused to work overtime, saying the plant was understaffed and that Honeywell was using overtime to avoid filling the needed positions. In turn, Pritchett, then the plant's operating manager, sent a memo in July canceling summer vacations for all workers because not enough overtime shifts were being filled. So after that, now they seem to have resolved all of these conflicts and hired them all back and put them all back to work just before Christmas.
Well, this is just an unbelievable coincidence because we happen to have Mike Griffin here in the studio. I was going to introduce you a little bit later, but Mike, you worked with these guys at Honeywell back when the conflict first started with the company, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And I went down and trained them on the Road Warrior program, Adopt a Family program, how to organize. And I hooked them up with radio stations and some of the old Staley support groups for fundraising around the country, and even participated in paying the way for some of them to go to California and different places. And unfortunately, I was taboo. The International made sure that I was not listened to. I mean, they were And you know, the result was is all this that they've gone through.
And how long has this that been? I mean, this has been a couple of years, hasn't
it? Yeah, it has. All of this could have been avoided if they had just taken the stand in the beginning. You know, and decided to fight back in a credible way.
Yeah, it just seems like so many labor struggles in the past, oh, I don't know, a couple decades, it seems, is that, you know, unions are just basically fighting with both hands behind their back.
Well, yeah, they're fighting with both hands behind their back, but they're fighting with one of those hands reaching back into the membership's pocket.
You're talking about in regards to the international, yeah.
Exactly right. The theme is now. Is we don't think we can beat them, so we're not even going to bother trying. So you guys either accept these bad contracts and bad conditions, no matter how bad they are, or we're just not going to fight for you. That's the mantra they've got. I mean, it's not about getting money for their personal self or being on the payroll or anything like that. It's about making the organization survive for some purpose that defies my imagination, because if it isn't fighting for the workers,
yeah,
and it isn't doing its job, it shouldn't be there.
That's some good insight, Mike. Bill, did you have something to?
Well, I could add that I think a lot of this just has to do with lack of education of the people in our membership. I mean, not membership, but our leadership also, because we're way past the Depression era generation of labor leaders who remember things like that, and they're not, now the laborers is post mob, but in the corporate zone, and they're just they are afraid. And that is what it is we negotiate out of fear. We do not negotiate out of strength. The building trades, and Mike, you're a millwright, which would put you are you a member of the Carpenters Union?
Not anymore.
Okay, but Dave, you've had your experience.
Yeah, not anymore, I'm proud to say.
They were glad to be rid of me.
Right. Yeah, likewise.
Now, the building trades, which have always pretty much existed in one form or another throughout American history, the building trades is a service. We are the personnel department of the contractors, plus we give them political backup for, you know, that helps in their business. We train our members. For example, on the 25th of January, I will take a four-hour class on how to hold a stop sign on Illinois State Highways.
Okay.
That came about through lobbying, of course, by the paving contractors and the laborers union. And it's just, but that's what it is. And these industrial unions, they don't even have that. They don't have training programs for their employees.
And there's still a big separation between skilled trades and industrial unions.
So
it's as deadly as it was when John L. Lewis.
Yeah, there Samuel Gompers exactly and all that, you know. But they don't have that bargaining chip. That's what was really bizarre when Andy Stern was out with that org. You know, I'd see him on interviews, and he'd be like, "Oh well, signing up with us is so much better for the employer." And I'm thinking, how? What do you
because
do for the? What are you doing for the employer then?
Yeah,
because you're not like the building trades. You don't train people. You don't have a referral hall that makes it real easy for people to hire and fire and staff their projects.
But besides that, union is supposed to be there for the members. It's supposed to represent the membership, not the employer.
It's supposed to make sure that every member of that local gets a fair share of the work.
Yes, that too.
That doesn't happen. We had a saying in the millwrights: "Piss off your BA and see the USA." That meant if you didn't cross picket lines, which I would never do.
Yeah,
I would die before I did that.
Yeah,
and you didn't play by their rules and suck up to the contractor, you know. And you should see some of the members that I had to work with over the years. I was embarrassed.
I had no clue what a union was.
Now, I was able to contaminate some of our younger members and some of our apprentices and get them on the right course to what a union stands for.
Yeah, well, good
but
for
it
you.
Was always in the face of the BA.
Yes. Well, listen to this, Mike. I had a guy tell me that progressive income taxes were bad. And this guy is probably about 40 years old. Mm-hmm. He's a laborer, and he was on a pretty big job, had a pretty cushy job. Mm-hmm. And he told me that he was against progressive income taxes because those are the taxes of kings and something. It was out of the Bible. Oh. It was a Bible verse against, but actually it's against a 10% flat tax was what the Bible verse was about. There was no progressive. Oh, yeah, man. It's a tax of kings and pharaohs.
Whatever.
So now you got another layer you're fighting with these. A lot of this right wacko right-wing religious stuff has gotten into the building trades. And then, and now people are like, it's the Illuminati and the New World Order and false flag attacks on everything.
Yeah, well, that spills right over into a subject that is near and dear to me, and that is the robbing of pension funds.
Yep, which we're going to be discussing here in definitely linked here.
It's a great segue because they're not only satisfied with taking away what we could have earned.
Yeah.
Now they want to take away what we've already earned.
Yep. And that money and those pension funds went to finance capitalism, too.
Absolutely.
Various capitalists. It helped build this financial system and economy.
Mm-hmm.
I would give anything to see Dave Benton from Channel 3 or a reporter from WAND or one of them actually speak up and say, hey, there's something wrong here. This money belongs to those employees. They're out there investigating a couple of paper clips that got lost in the shuffle. Them grinding all the papers up.
Well, how about WAND, which is right across the street from the basically abandoned Borg Warner plant?
Yep.
You know, I don't know. I haven't been watching hardly any local TV news. I don't know. But I do have to say, I've always noticed that WICD, which is the smallest station here, has usually been the best one when it comes to the underdog. Maybe they can relate. They're on the
okay. I mean, there's always, in every issue, there's a right and a wrong. And you either cover a story based on the right of it or the wrong of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that you can throw up in the air and say, raiding pension funds and stealing from your employees is okay because they're employees. They're really second-class citizens in America.
That's amazing that whole narrative is there.
Look at it this way. If I went out there and I went to the state of Illinois and I went to one of their office complexes and I took $300,000 or $400,000 and I said, well, I'm going to keep this just for a while. I need to use it. And I might give it back, and I might not. How many years of prison do you think I would get?
Multiple. But
this fat,
yeah,
lazy slug we've got for a governor stole their money. And every legislator that went along with it done exactly the same thing. These people are not problem solvers. They're not heroes. They're thieves. It's a den of thieves on both sides of the aisle. That's the Chicago mentality, you know, that briefcase mentality coming from guys like the mayor up there and, you know, our governor, our esteemed governor.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if you steal someone's money, you stole their money. It doesn't mean that you are a good negotiator or that you're some kind of a hero.
Yeah.
You stole their money.
If you can hold a gun, you're not negotiating.
Exactly right. The difference is, instead of the machine guns that Al Capone used, they got briefcases and lawyers and corrupt judges now.
And the state police.
Yes, indeed.
State police. Well, I've had my run with them.
Here's an interesting story in contrast from Korea. I guess there's been no headway in the negotiations between Korrail, a South Korea state-run railroad, and the Rail Workers Union. Yesterday, union leaders were holed up in a Seoul temple surrounded by police who were threatening to arrest them. Warrants have been issued for more than 25 union officials for what the government says is a quote-unquote illegal strike. The government is training strike breakers for what is the longest strike in South Korean history. More than 8,000 workers walked off the job December 9th. Facts for Working People, which is where the story comes from, talked with the South Korean activists who likened the country's first female president, Park Geun-hye, to Britain's Margaret Thatcher. Park is the daughter of the late president Park Chung-hee. Both of Park Geun-hye's parents were assassinated. Like Thatcher, Park intends to crush the South Korean unions. The rail workers and their unions have been a major obstacle to the privatization of the railroads over the last 10 years. According to the quote-unquote official news agencies, the railroad is losing money. It's the same argument that is made here in the U.S. about the Postal Service, one of the most efficient entities in the country delivering mail to every household. The obstacle to any compromise is the government's refusal to drop plans for a subsidiary that is intended to run some of the system's high-speed rail services. The unions correctly see this as trying to get privatization into the back door. The rail workers have been supported by the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions, which is, has 690,000 members, and by all accounts, Park's hardline stand is having a negative effect on our popularity, which has fallen to 48%. The influence of U.S. corporate class and its policies cannot be underestimated when it comes to South Korea. The South Korean military, for example, is completely under the command of the U.S. military. And what sovereign nation allows its military wing to be under the direction of another nation? There are numerous demonstrations taking place throughout the U.S. and other countries in support of South Korean workers. You know, these South Korean workers, the railroad workers in particular, they have put up a heck of a fight over the years.
Their auto workers do, too.
Yes. I've seen videos of the, I think it was back in the late 90s, and there was a general strike. Oh, man, you should see them battling with the police out in the street. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have, like, these long iron poles.
Remember that.
I mean, they don't just go up against riot police with no head protection or anything else. I mean, they fight back.
Well, they also had their union leaders were taking sanctuary in a Catholic church at one point, and the workers surrounded the church with the rebars like you were talking about to defend their leaders. Another one, I saw videos, this is back, I think, in the early 2000s, when they were, another privatization thing, they were privatizing the telecom system, okay, the telephone system. And what happened was they had a whole bunch of temporary workers, and they laid all them off, got rid of them. Well, they formed a union after they lost their jobs and when they were picketing. And then they go into the offices and have these huge, like, kung fu fights with security, man. I mean, it didn't look like a Bruce Lee movie or something.
Oh, wow. It's terrible when workers are born with a backbone.
Yeah.
Well, you wonder what happened in America.
Well, you know,
what was it that sucked our backbones out and told us that we got to lay down for these corporate bastards? What is it?
But here's something a lot of people don't realize. The United States is those people in on MASH who were helping out and fighting the Korea War and all that. They fought it so that a dictatorship could happen. South Korea was a dictatorship up to the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Bob, did you have another news story for us or a comment on this?
I got another news story.
Okay, and then
a little closer to home here again.
Okay.
Fired Walmart workers win $50,000 in back pay.
Oh, great.
This is workers in Walmart's vast fulfillment network who say they've been treated illegally at work have gotten some good news for the holidays. Last Monday, just days after a Walmart contractor agreed to pay out $4.7 million for alleged wage theft to more than 500 warehouse workers in Southern California, the NLRB secured a settlement over illegal retaliation against employees at the retail giant's distribution center in Elwood, Illinois. Elwood up around Joliet area there. Nine workers affiliated with the Warehouse Workers for Justice, WWJ, at the Joliet, Illinois-based workers center backed by the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America, UE, who alleged that they were fired for workplace organizing will receive a combined total of $52,381 in back pay, according to WWJ. It came at a good time, says Mike Compton, one of the fired workers. All nine of us needed it. Some of us were getting in pretty tight spots. So it says, both the Illinois settlement and the California agreement are with the same Walmart contractor, Schneider Logistics, which operates many of the retailers' warehouses around the country. And also in Illinois, the NLRB also implicated two staffing agencies, Roadlink Workforce Solutions and Skyward Employment Services. So it says, after the past 4 years, workers in Walmart warehouses have filed lawsuits and held strikes in response to what they say are poverty wages and unsafe working conditions. The warehouse workers often earn only minimum wage, do not receive benefits. Plus, they say they work more hours than they are paid for, labor in extreme temperatures, and lift boxes that weigh over, up to 250 pounds.
But who went to jail?
Nobody.
I'm sorry, I'm missing the point. Because if I went down here to Busey Bank and I told them I wanted $100,000 and I was going to walk out of there with it,
$4.7 million
because I can have it.
They took from the guys in California.
I can do that. And,
yeah.
You know, I would go to jail for 25, 30 years, you know, under a federal prosecution.
Yeah.
But why is it those employers don't go to jail?
I don't know.
Very good question, Mike. And we're going to take a quick music break here. We're going to be right back and talk a little bit about that. You're listening to The World Laborer on WFTLer Support Community Radio Station, Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned.
I heard the gentlest swords. I robbed my wife and son. I turn my back on troubles, troubles I'd begun. I cut a swath of pain and loss in the hallways of my home. In the quiet of my room, I know the things I've done. Save the hammer for the man. Save the hammer for the man. It's the calling of the wretched, it's the rising of the damned. Save the hammer for the man. I was driven from the city, in the wilderness I stand. In the cleansing rain and silence, I made my battle plan. Alone I marched towards freedom, leaving footprints across the land. With a vow that's left unspoken, save the hammer for the man.
Save the hammer for the man. Save the hammer for the man.
Where are they?
Okay, we're back. This is the World Labor Hour on WFT Community Radio Station in Champaign, Illinois. We're here with Mike Griffin, who, for listeners who are not familiar with Mike, Mike was a veteran of the Staley lockout and the war zone fights in Decatur, Illinois during the early to mid-90s, in which at one point three various large employers in the small, relatively small city of Decatur, Illinois were either locked out or on strike. A. Staley, Caterpillar, and Bridgestone Firestone. And Mike's got a lot of experience. I mean, after those, he's helped countless numbers of rank-and-file union members in their various battles with both employers and sometimes their own unions, and has been editor for quite a few years of the Warzone Foundation newsletter. Mike, are you still writing the Warzone?
No, I just do online stories now once in a while.
But
when if I wrote about all the things that kind of got my ire up, I'd be writing all the time.
Yes, there's so much going on.
I'm just not seeing leadership in this country. And you know, I mean, look at the Democratic Party. Where's it at? It's gone.
Yeah.
You got Barack Obama. Yeah. He sent Ratner the Rat in as an auto czar.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, let's talk about this. This whole thing.
He jumped in there and he broke the law in the way that he settled their pensions. He broke the law, the ERISA laws.
Right.
But that was the President of the United States, a hand-picked stooge.
Yeah.
So why not?
You know, it's amazing how this was celebrated as a great victory.
And it wasn't.
No, not for the workers.
Ask the UAW members up there in Ohio and Michigan, lower Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, he did the same thing when he brought that piece of garbage Arne Duncan in to run the schools.
Oh, yes.
Look what he did to the Chicago schools and the teachers' unions up there.
This from the man that, when he was running, didn't he say something about putting on his comfortable shoes and going out and walking the picket line with the workers?
And when he chose Rahm Emanuel
as
his chief of staff, you knew right then the fix was in.
Right.
Because he was a poster child for the National Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
And that's why there's so many problems with this healthcare thing.
Yeah.
Instead of having a single-payer plan, he went the route of making sure the insurance companies kept a say in it and kept it from being privatized in a single-payer plan.
Bail out the insurance companies.
Single-payer plan would have worked.
Yes. Yep. Well,
Well, here's another good one, Mike.
Yeah, he knew it.
This Jeffrey Immelt, who was CEO of General Electric, the company that pays no income taxes, was led the advisory council on jobs.
For Obama administration?
That's correct. Hey, you got a caller.
Yes, indeed. I'll see who this is. And I want to let the listeners know, we are going to open up the phone lines as well, 359-6545. Do you have any questions? Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Joe Barry and Helena Worthen calling from California.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Helena. How are you doing?
Good. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Very good. We have Mike Griffin here in the studio with us from Decatur, Illinois, a veteran of the Staley lockout and stuff. And we kind of been warming it up a little bit here talking about various forms of corporate crime and pension theft being one of them. And I wanted you guys to call in since not only are you both receiving a State of Illinois pension, but also you were involved with the Institute of Labor Industrial Relations for quite a few years. So why don't we just start out, whichever one of you wants to start, that is, and just talk about your opinions about what you think about this, what's been going on with the State of Illinois and also the State of California state employee pension plans.
Well, that's a pretty broad question.
Okay, I'll let you narrow it. You can narrow the focus however you like.
We were talking about it this morning as we thought about what we might say. One of the things that we certainly made mention of is that Illinois, people who are in the public sector in Illinois don't get Social Security. They don't pay into Social Security, and so they don't get Social Security when they retire. And instead, they get State of Illinois pension, which depends on the State of Illinois putting money into its pension plan so that the money is actually there when you retire, which didn't happen.
And the reason there's a crisis now, exacerbated by the right wing, of course, talking about all the problems being the result of these greedy public employees and their retirees, is that for decades they didn't put their legally mandated, the state did not put the legally mandated amounts into the fund. And we're just running off of the fact that the stock market was going up and up, and oh well, we can defer that because the value of the fund it keeps going up, and it's fine for for the foreseeable future. And so they didn't meet their legal requirements, and now they want us to cover for them, retirees and present employees and future hires, and the whole pattern of having two and three and four tier retirement systems is now becoming endemic both in the public and the private sector. This all comes originally. The problem arises from the fact that Social Security Act only covered about half the working class when it was passed. Like the National Labor Relations Act and the Fair Labor Standards Act, all those New Deal laws only covered about half the working class, and the people they left out were the people, by and large, who got paid the least, farm workers, domestic workers, and public employees. And we're also, of course, disproportionately women and disproportionately minorities. And over the years, they got added back into the system partially of those various laws, including Social Security. But it's like health care. If we had one system for everybody that everybody paid into on a fair basis, and covered everybody to a reasonable living wage, it would even out even a capitalist economy's ups and downs because people would have buying power, and it would certainly be fairer and more humane to the to the working class.
Dean Baker wrote a recent article called titled Pension Theft, Class War Goes to the Next Stage. And in this article, he's quoted as saying, the disturbing aspect about the Illinois pension situation is that the underfunding of the pension was a deliberate choice. For years, the governor and legislator approved budgets that did not make the required contribution of the pensions. The city of Chicago under Mayor Richard Daley did the same thing, and that this was a deliberate shafting of workers in which most of the state's leading political figures were involved. Do you agree with that statement?
Absolutely.
Sure. Yes. Well, you mentioned also, you're talking about that the state of Illinois violated the law by not funding that pension, and yes, you're right. But when you or I violate a contract or a condition of work, we can go to jail for it. How come the employer doesn't?
Well, this isn't just a contract. This is also a constitutional obligation to the state of Illinois. It's a constitutional obligation to pay those pensions, to have those pensions. Unfortunately, they didn't extend the idea to they actually have to fund them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did they have to write that into the Constitution to make these guys, and this is both parties. This has been growing for decades.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting the fact that in Illinois and California, both cases involved Democratic governors, Pat Quinn in Illinois, Jerry Brown in California. So, I mean, this seems to be a trend, a new corporate political trend. Do you guys, Joe and Helena, do you see this continuing in the future? And if so, what do you think, you know, workers should do about it?
I'm thinking about what I know about California. Now, I'm a little embarrassed here because this is stuff that I am not as up on as I ought to be.
Okay, well, you can just focus on Illinois. Since you're more familiar with that, since you guys are directly affected by that.
Well, I can tell you, sister, that that it's going to get considerably worse because as these states move in the direction of Wisconsin with these phony right-wing ideologues denying and destroying collective bargaining rights, it just opens the floodgates. It's going to get considerably worse. And there's nothing we can do to fix it.
Okay. Yes, go ahead. Yes, go ahead, Helen. I'm sorry.
There's a strategy that you all may have read about
that's
happening here in Richmond, California, this eminent domain
strategy. Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
About that?
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that for the listeners who aren't familiar with that situation.
Okay. This is where a municipality or a city or a region that has some kind of legal authority exercises eminent domain on behalf of the citizens. Instead of having, instead of it being a bank foreclosing on people's houses and throwing people out of their homes, it's the city doing eminent domain over the banks. The banks, I'm putting this in quotes, ownership of homes that are underwater.
Mm-hmm.
The city exercising eminent domain over that and taking over, taking over that property.
Okay. And how would that... Yes, and how would that apply to a situation like we have in Illinois with the pension problem?
Well, I mean, the obvious thing is that you're talking about the government stepping in to protect the common good, and the obligations of various levels of government that they have assumed in the case of Illinois constitutionally, to make the decision that those obligations are primary over, over other claims. Just like bankruptcy court judges have to decide are the claims, the back wages and pensions of workers, if a company goes bankrupt, are those superior or inferior to the claims of other creditors?
Inferior.
And unfortunately, they've generally decided that they're inferior.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no reason why that would have to be the case, and likewise, eminent domain doesn't just have to serve property developers who want to develop a shopping center for money, which they've started using eminent domain for that. Condemning land for private purposes, not just public purposes. Well, but the city of Richmond turned it on its head. So the power of the state to do eminent domain or take over essentially a property, and in this case, assume an obligation is well established. At the beginning of the United States, there was a big fight over the national government. Well, it wasn't federal yet; it was Articles of Confederation, assuming the debts of the states under the from the Revolution, And there was a big fight about that, and they decided to do it because it would establish the full faith and credit of the United States going forward better. And some speculators, of course, who held a lot of those notes by then, got real rich. But the point is that there's lots of precedent. It's all a matter of who's got the power to force the government to serve their interests. And, you know, there's no reason why another level of government couldn't step in and make this just like they passed the law about private pensions years ago when a lot of them were cheating people. And that law has, you know, ERISA, and that law has proven to be insufficient to its original purpose, but it's the same general principle. The problem is that the political winds are blowing against us right now, and the ruling class and the right wing are mobilized against us much more than we are mobilized to fight back.
Hey, I've got another idea. Instead of Illinois taking on debt by bond issuing and paying interest on bonds and such, why can't Illinois be treated like a bank and get this almost free money from the Federal Reserve? In fact, that is one argument perhaps for having a state. And I've seen, I can't remember where it was right now, somebody's going to start a county bank somewhere. That was one of the reasons for it, was because they could get that Federal Reserve money that way. If they could do that straight to the states, you know, and then Illinois definitely, if it would have a modern tax structure also, that could get us out of the help. The eminent domain, I don't see where the money's going to come from.
Well, I mean, the federal government can make money.
That's what I'm saying right now, is if they would apply the Federal Reserve, allow it just to give the, I don't know if there's laws against that or if that's a constitutional thing or what about it. I just know that it's not ever happened as far as I can tell.
Well, there's a state bank in North Dakota, and they have the same relationship to the Federal Reserve as private banks in other states do. And that was the only state that didn't suffer grievous harm in the crash on the real estate, homeowner front. So there's certainly a lesson there. I'm not the first one to point that out.
Yeah, well, the state of North Dakota has a flour mill in Grand Forks that's owned by the state of North Dakota, and it's unionized by the grain millers.
Exactly. By the way, I should note, there is a movie called Northern Lights about the struggle that established those things. It was called the Nonpartisan League. It was basically people out of the Socialist Party.
Yep.
In the 1920s. And that movie has just been reissued in a new print. And it's going to be available on DVD. The only reason I know is because they're having a premiere of the new version, and the filmmakers are going to be here out in the Bay Area in the next couple of weeks. They're both North Dakota Scandinavians, and that's where that all came from. Was that? But that, it's a wonderful movie. It's one of the great movies of popular struggle ever made.
Northern Lights, okay, we definitely want to keep in mind for that one and everything.
Yeah, it's a real classic, Dave. It's usually shown in a lot of film classes in college.
Okay. Well, Joe and Helena, thank you for calling in and stuff. And, please feel free to, if you got any updates on this and everything, feel free to email me and stuff, because I think this issue is not going to go away anytime soon. And, we just kind of have to keep struggling any way we can to make sure this is rectified. For the workers of Illinois who worked all those years and deserve every bit of that. Yes, let's call it an entitlement, because that's what it is, because you're entitled to that money because you paid into it. So, again, thank you for calling in, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Okay, we're going to take a quick music break, and then we're going to rehuddle here and come back with Mike Griffin and the rest of the World Labor Hour crew. Stay tuned.
Me and my babe were talking, and what she said is true. Said seems like times are getting tough, like back in 92. You don't have a job, our bills are past due. So tell me, baby, what are we gonna do? Tough times. any money, you can't live happy no more. I had a good job, working many hours a week. They had a big layoff, and they got poor me.
Okay, it was a little blues classic there. Compliments of Bob Pelesny on his Bob's Collection, and it was Tough Times by the artist. Oh, it's Kilbourne Alley, a local blues band here in Champaign, Illinois. I didn't realize Kilbourne Alley did that song. Man, it sounded like some old song out of the Mississippi Delta from the 1940s, the way they do that.
I think that song was written back in 38 or something. Like
okay.
That, 1942 by an old guy. They redid that.
That's okay.
Kind of a cover, I think.
Well, they did a great job. They made it sound like it was actually even from that era, you know?
They're a great traditional Chicago blues band.
Okay.
Great stuff.
Okay. And go ahead, Bill. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. I just, Bob, I said, you're a member of an organization having to do with blues here in town?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Prairie Crossroads Blues Society.
All right. Now, I suppose they got a website.
PrairieCrossroadsBlues.org.
All right, folks. There you go. From the blues maven, Bob.
Okay.
Pelesny.
Okay. So we're back now about the pension theft. And Mike Griffin, you're the fight back man. You've built a career out of it. What do you think workers need to do to get this rectified? And in particular, what do you think of Joe Barry and Helena Barry's suggestion about using eminent domain?
Well, I don't think that can. I don't see how that can actually make a difference. But there's no question in my mind that the majority of the media, in fact, all of it, and 99.9% of the Democratic Party has done everything they can to misdirect people's attention on those benefits, to misrepresent them, to make it sound like it's a gift or entitlement or something that it's not.
And it is an entitlement.
It's their money.
Yeah, it's their money. They're entitled to it.
And when you take their money, you're a thief and a liar and a scoundrel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what our governor is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would love to debate him on this issue one-on-one, anytime.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all know what a thief is. It's someone who steals your money.
Mm-hmm.
They stole the money. But I think that the workers that are involved in collecting these pensions, they need to organize across union lines, put tens of thousands of state workers out in the streets of Illinois, and handbill this entire state with the facts about these pensions until they get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And if that includes picketing WCIA and WAND and Decatur and Champaign and picketing in Springfield and Chicago, then they need to organize those pickets as well.
You know, that's interesting. Why not take it right to Governor Quinn? I saw some anti-fracking activists last week dressed up as elves and took an oil rig, an oil fracking rig, a replica of one, and set it in Governor Quinn's Chicago mansion's front yard.
Exactly.
And boy, that got some media attention.
Yeah, it did. It just got enough for them to try to poo-poo it and blow it off, you know, but fracking is a very dangerous situation.
Indeed.
For groundwater.
Indeed.
And they're all behind it. Obama's behind it.
Yep, yep.
They all love it. Hillary's behind it.
Well, baby, here's something amazing. They want to do that, and I actually have a well where when I pour a glass of water, you cannot see through it because it is full of natural gas.
Oh, wow.
All they would have to do is just drill me a new well and just sit there and let that gas percolate out of my old well and capture it. I don't get to see, you know, when there's methane like that just coming out of water wells, and I've heard stories about that since I was a kid in this area. I don't know why they think they need to frack.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get off on this issue. I mean, I just thought I'd give that example using a little direct action
there. They need to mobilize. It needs to go on the basis of direct action. They need to take and finalize that mass demonstration and everything right there at the state capitol and take over that governor's office in an act of civil disobedience.
And by the way, Dave, was the group responsible for that Illinois People's Action?
Perhaps. I'm not sure.
I believe it was, and we did have a guest from that group.
Yes, Dawn from Bloomington. Yes, she was on the show actually about a month and a half ago.
And you can find out more. It's at Illinois peoplesaction.org, all one word and lowercase.
Okay, and I want to welcome anybody out there that would like to call in with any questions for Mike Griffin or any of us. You can call 359-6545, or at this point, you could also call 359-5483. That's 359-5483. So, okay, Mike, I know, you know, you've done... Back in, you know, over the years, you've done a lot of creative things to get situations turned around for workers and stuff. And, you know, you mentioned about the march on the state capitol and even occupying the governor's office. You guys did that back
yes, we did.
In the 90s and stuff.
Yes, we did. And they arrested like 42 people,
mm-hmm.
but they dropped the charges because it was a political nightmare
mm-hmm.
for the governor, you know, who refused to meet with us because that governor... He was aiding and abetting the companies involved in those strikes and lockouts. In my opinion, he was another thief
mm-hmm.
because he was denying all of those people the right to simple justice.
Mm-hmm. Who was the governor back then?
He was from Charleston, Illinois, and he got a lot better rap than he deserved.
Oh, Evans?
I'll guarantee you.
Evans?
Not Evans. No. He lives in Mahomet.
Yeah.
Oh,
Edgar.
I was close to that.
Exactly right. I would never promote violence of any kind.
Sure.
But the only way you're going to change things is get out there and mobilize large numbers of people and demonstrate and make this issue be the centerfold of the political activity going on in Illinois.
There is
no NLRB.
Mm-hmm.
There is no court system. It doesn't exist.
But there is no government. Okay. I mean, in a sense, and that is like what you're talking about. There's no accountability through court systems,
nope.
through the Constitution of the state of Illinois with the laws. So then that's not going to change things. And that's what the progressive side of this country I've thought this for decades relied way too much on courts.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we have to remind them, just like the unions have to be reminded that they are their members, that this nation is its citizens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this nation is not a guy in a black robe that has basically arbitrary power to do what he wants, and he derives his power from us. And I'm thinking what we should do is read a book called Deep Green Resistance by Derek Jensen and another author.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard him and other people talk about this, and what they did was they went back. And see, their thing is, right now, and this is what I'm starting to think right now, Dave, I'm starting to think that this whole labor stuff, we're getting way beyond, unless the labor unions want to start becoming true political organizations and get on the right side, when the laborers can quit looking at a few thousand extra jobs in the Dakotas for their members and start looking at possibly the end of human civilization due to these activities. We need massive civil disobedience, and they are some organizations with somewhat of an ability to pull that off if they wanted. Sorry.
They're all so proud of Nelson Mandela. Let's use the tactics that Nelson Mandela would have.
Good point, Mike.
Be Nelson Mandela.
I wanted to mention there's a new program that WEFT's been running on Friday nights at 5 o'clock called Liberation Radio. It's put out by PSL Web.
Which is
the Party for Socialism and Liberation.
That's right. Good show.
And good show. 5 o'clock on Fridays here at WEFT.
Okay, somebody's calling here. Let's see who we got. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Nick from the IBEW.
Well, hello, Nick. How you doing today?
I'm loving it. I've always loved hearing what Mike Griffin's got to say because he's got his ear to the pulse of media mechanics.
Okay.
And he is absolutely right. When the Arctic Greenpeace people were arrested, the more news cycles for their peaceful protests just added to free public relations, and it ends up defying what the corporate mantra about New silence, or government protocol for new silence. These people are hooligans and should be prosecuted the full extent of the law. The more you talked about them on the news every night, and the more you talked about Pussy Riot, and then you tie it in with the Olympics, Putin just wanted to get rid of these people so that the direct action would stop, even though they tore the flags down.
You know,
the same thing with fracking. If you don't want to catch your water on fire over in Bemint, then you need to go ahead and you need to just start advertising. Put it on YouTube. Go viral. But the only way you're going to get that, and a 50-gallon drum accidentally spilled on somebody's front lawn of fracking compound, like, you don't know what's in there. The oil companies won't tell us. So, for all I know, it's just dirty water. But to continue, that's why occupation movement was so spectacularly successful, is it was just one little thing after another that caught the very childlike curiosity of the media, particularly here. They're not terribly sophisticated. Remember, if it's sensational, if it bleeds, it leads. All these little things. But I say, when I say, gentlemen, take up arms, leave all the guns at home, and just use your creativity. And it doesn't mean having to build puppets.
Okay.
United office.
Yeah, I never did get the whole puppet thing. And I want to start out by saying I really enjoy people on NPR and the other national media hearing them say Pussy Riot. So I hope those ladies keep in action.
Yes.
And,
all I can say is it wouldn't sound very good if three guys named them.
yeah, for sure.
Well, but I just want to say, too, that's how I was talking about this book, Deep Green Resistance, because what they're talking about, what they did was, and I know I got off on a weird tangent, but they studied resistance movements in the past, things like, you know, the resistance against the Nazis and so on. And basically, we are at a point. I mean, we need to start blocking interstates and things like that. I know people don't see it as serious, but this is, I mean, there's some estimates the year 2030 is it.
Yeah. Well, Nick, let me ask you this. As far as the pension issue, what do you think should be done? What should these state workers do and others?
Mr. Griffin, Mike has got it nailed down. But you take the informational flyers. And we got state employees. I'm married to a state employee.
Okay.
But the outrage should be so genuine that the repeal of this law will be in effect, and out of the conscience of the people, making sure that their legislators are following the steps necessary to repeal and fund. Remember, it's 67% funded, 68% funded. That's better than places that have significantly greater pension funds than the state of Illinois. And just to put it all in perspective, as we watch the Republican or the conservative capitalist machinery in the state of Michigan, basically eyeballing the art treasures in the Illinois Art Museum and saying, well, yeah, your municipal pensions are on the block. Got to remember that pension system was funded 77% of its total capacity of what the obligations were. So that's even more than, and they're in bankruptcy. But federal law prohibits ERISA defined pension benefit from being used in bankruptcy settlements. It's a federal law. And so to remind people of that again and again, that there are no exceptions to this. And you're going to have plenty of conservative appointees that are just the federal district court that will say, yeah, but, you know, the city's in default. And he says, yeah, but the pension doesn't belong to the city. It belongs to the people. So, you know, they didn't cause the bankruptcy.
You get a point. Yes, indeed. Okay, Nick, thank you very much for calling in. And we will we want to kind of finish up here with some final words from Mike Griffin. So thanks again for calling in.
Dave, I would love to hear, before he departs the airwaves, do you have some more suggestions and ideas, Mr. Griffin?
Okay.
What does the state of Illinois, the people of the state of Illinois, have to do to keep oil drillers out of our state and our pensions where they belong?
That's exactly right.
Okay, thanks, Nick.
1 minute.
Okay. All right, Mike, so that almost rhymes. Keep the oil drillers out of state and the pensions safe.
Well, here's the thing. We've got to redefine how our media interacts with the issues that are going on. And we got to make them focus on things that are really significant. And this pension thing is significant.